Welcome to Random Gaming Talk. It's Entertainment Talk's podcast for video games. I'm your host, Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is Roberts. How's it going?
It's going good. How's it going for you?
Very, 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 very good. We'll get onto that in a minute. I'll explain it in a minute. I have a special announcement to make, which I've deliberately not prepared Robert for. But before we get to that, just to tease that and pin that, what have you been playing?
Mostly I have been playing nothing. I've actually been on holiday.
Oh, nice.
Since Thursday, I flew down to Florida to spend time with my parents because they've 99% retired down there. They still have a condo that's in the process of being sold. And once they're done with that, they'll be 100% Floridians. So I was from there. I flew out Friday morning, which almost didn't happen, and that's a fun story. And then I flew back today and got back home about 12:30, which was about 6 hours ago, Matt's time.
Oh.
As for the fun story, my mom likes to say that there are some things that are what she calls a stupid tax, to where people buy something and they're paying for their stupidity. Well, I have had a thing to where it wasn't so much a stupid tax as it was a pay the hell attention tax. So here in the States, you can check in and say, hey, I'm ready-ish for a flight 24 hours before departure time. So I get on my app Thursday. It won't let me check in at all. And I figure, okay, the app's just broken. So Friday morning at 4:30 in the morning, I go back to the app, and it lets me check in. So I check in, and then I look at it, and it says, your flight is 14 hours away. And I'm like, no, my flight's at 8 o'clock a.m. And that's when I noticed that I did not book the 8 a.m. flight. I booked the 8 p.m. flight. So frantic scramble. I was able to book a 7:30 flight, but it cost me a transfer fee of $140, which the money itself, I'm not mad at because A, I'm the one that booked the wrong flight, and B, there's a processing fee. I'm only mad because the transfer fee was because it wouldn't let me book or reschedule a generic ticket. It made me get the upgrade ticket. It made me get the $135.99 seat upgrade, which they don't have assigned seatings on that airline. So the only thing that $135 got me was a free $9 alcoholic beverage at 8 in the morning. And you can bet your ass I took that booze because, one, I was on vacation, and, two, I fucking paid for it.
Mm-hmm. Fair price.
But flight out was fine. Perfect timing for me because as soon as I flew out, that's when the 3-day snowstorm started. And I flew back in today, and there's no snow for the next 2 weeks. So, yay me.
Cool. All right, there we go. So you played nothing at all?
Nothing.
No, all right. Okay, should we switch to me, I suppose?
Yeah.
Don't want to like overblow this as a special announcement. It's not like, well, it's not a new podcast series, but there's a podcast that will be attached to it. So there's a little game I started playing 2 years ago, and very, very long story short, I don't want to lead up to this because this has been like a very long time coming, and I've kind of very secretly been I don't know if grinding is the right word, because it's not really grinding in this version of the game that I played. It was a little game I played, came out 2 years ago. It went really, 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 really well until I had a slightly bittersweet ending to it. And then put that back on the shelf, thought, okay, maybe revisit that one day, see what happens, all that kind of stuff. Life moved on, thought about it every single day still since, just in terms of, you know, the two different endings of this game, and the one that I went with and the one that I didn't quite achieve. This is not a choice based, or one of the choices is choice based, the other one is more earned. And then, again, continue to have it in the back of my mind in terms of, okay, one day you can get back in there maybe and, you know, try again and see where you can kind of get with it. This game then got an update. I think it was last year. No, it was this year that it got an update. So through pretty much all of 2024, I didn't really touch this game, etc., etc. And then the game got an update. It got an easy mode added to it and had some DLC released for it, the DLC of which you get separately. And then the update came out and I thought, huh, okay. So the thing that I struggled with this game was the difficulty. Again, made it all the way through right to the end, and then a poor choice happened. And I thought, okay, if I can, because this is the game that, in order for me to correct my mistake, I have to replay the entire game. I'll tell you, of course, what game this is in a minute. I'm just having fun and leading up to it. So I did all that, and I thought, oh, okay, they've added, essentially now, let's say easy, normal, and hard mode. And the hard mode was the default mode from before. There was no difficulty change. And I thought, okay, if I use the easy mode, go through everything that I've already been through, because it should be easier, and it was. That specific part took me about 2 weeks. Again, all this was happening while we were still doing gaming talks, while life was going on. I just deliberately didn't mention any of it. I didn't want to mention a single thing that had happened until I'd actually done what I wanted to do, which has been achieved today. So the time has come. The moment has finally arrived. As of about literally 2 hours ago, the last 2 hours have been kind of manic. I've beaten Lies of P at long, long last. I've already recorded a special little podcast that will be out tomorrow. And I'm not going to go over every single thing that I talked about on there, because that was like a good half an hour of just my mental journey, not just mental in terms of the game being a bit, you know, mad, but my brain, mental journey in this game, and the idea of, you know, you can't beat this game, why do you think you can beat this game, final boss is crazy, why do you think you can kill this final boss, etc., etc., all those kinds of things. I clipped the moment that it happened. I would have liked, by the way, for the when you clip things, for it to be as easy as what it is on PlayStation, and for you to be able to record longer than a minute, but and to also include your voice, because you can't do that if you clip via Xbox, which would have been great as well for the moment. So yeah, so over the last, like, because the initial stage of, okay, go through everything till you get to the final boss was 2 weeks. I think I was playing something next to it, because it would have been a bit weird for me to turn up to like two or three different gaming talk podcasts and be like, no, I'm not playing anything, because obviously I was. So yeah, that process took about 2 weeks, then got up to the previous challenge I'd had before. Still took me many tries to actually beat Nameless Puppet, which was the thing I didn't do before, because of course the other option is that you give your heart, which I had talked about before. And then, you know, games came out, life got a bit busy, put it back on the shelf for a bit. Yesterday I tried for a short space of time, didn't manage to do it. There was a period about 6 weeks ago where I tried, the muscle memory was all kind of off and everything, and, so that all kind of happened. And then I had, like, a couple of hours spare, if you want to call it that. Obviously there's other things I could have done, and I was like, you know what, got gaming talk in a few hours, let's just give this a go, let's just try what could happen. I die again and then put it back on the shelf and then pick it up later. And then didn't really change a lot of things I was doing, just kind of, cause that's the thing with these games, right, it's all about sort of getting a good run, getting a good, I can't remember what the thing's called, but there's a certain thing that resets itself with these games as to how aggressive the enemy's going to be or what they're going to do. There's a particular term for it, but I can't remember what it is right now. And just finally got a good run. There was a couple of runs in there, you know, when you start a boss and it just slaughters you from the beginning and you're like, no, this isn't the one. So that kind of happened. And by the end, it was kind of, you know, no more tactics, no more kind of like, oh, when he does this, you do this. Of course, I had certain things I was trying to do. And then had a cube of his health left. I just about managed to heal myself before. And did the good old kitchen sink of like, just look in my inventory of anything and everything that I can use, because tactics don't matter. You just want this thing to be dead. It doesn't matter what way you do it, how you do it, how many throwables you use. You've got a cube of his health left. You've been kind of on and off trying to do this for about 2 years. That sounds more extraneous than what it was. Just get it done. And then finally, again, just got a good run. Had like actually two health things left, which, you know, these fights can be kind of last gasp and sort of you've got a quarter, they've got a cube. Don't do anything stupid. Don't be greedy. And of course, with Nameless Puppet himself, has lots of spinning and jumping attacks, so you've got to like be really careful if you get greedy, otherwise he can just slaughter you in a couple of hits. But yeah, there's more to this story. Again, more of it will be shared in a podcast tomorrow. I haven't scheduled it yet, but I'm going to do it after this. It's been recorded and whatnot, but I also kind of wonder, like, okay, when I finally do this thing, now that I had the whole go through the game again, I was back to where I, you know, needed to be, which was outside that gate ready to fight the puppet. And it's interesting because it's sort of, okay, you can't get a game over. You can't really restart. There's no sort of like, the worst punishment you can get is you die and you get spawned back outside the gate and you start the fight again. And then, just again got a good run going. Couple of, you know, things that I threw at him, managed to stagger him, stun him one last time. He was stood there on the spot because that's what happens when you stagger him. Had a cube of health left, and I was like, right, this is the point where you, not where you get greedy, but this is the point where you just get in there and you just finish it off. And did a couple of jabs, and it was finally all over. Yeah, I'm sure I'll be reflecting on this quite a bit. I'm quite a reflective sort of person, if that makes sense. So I know I don't sound like I'm sort of cheering from and screaming from the rooftops of this thing that had been on my mind every single day since I chose the bad ending. And maybe in a week or two, when I keep thinking about this, because it's obviously going to be on my mind for a long time, maybe I'll do some sort of reflection podcast, because it's just a really, really nice, good thing that happened, that finally happened. But yeah, I can finally say on this podcast that I've beaten Lies of P after all my trials, tribulations, and all the other mental stuff that happened to me and in this game. Robert, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, congrats on getting that
thank you.
Knocked out. I know how that can stick in the back of your brain and just haunt you forever. That actually reminds me of a story from an Xbox podcast long, long time ago. One of the podcast hosts was talking about this one section at the very end of a Call of Duty game, and he was going for this achievement to beat that level on the hardest difficulty. And he just couldn't do it and couldn't do it and couldn't do it and couldn't do it. And he spent literally years trying to get this achievement, and he couldn't get it. So eventually he's like, okay, well, how much more do I actually have to do to get through this section of the game? And so he dropped the difficulty down a couple of ticks, and he gets through the part where he's always dying, and it's literally 2 seconds, game over. He was that close for years, and he was like 2 seconds from getting this achievement, and he couldn't get it. And he just said, yeah, I rage quit the game and I'm never playing it again.
Yeah.
Which I can appreciate.
But just a kind of message to anybody out there who, because I've still come across people on Reddit, because I'm in the Lies of P server, whatever it's called, and there's still people, you know, stuck on Nameless Puppet. But as I'll say, if I can do it, you can definitely do it. I know it's kind of a very cliche thing to say, but it's true. But I finally watched that goddamn health bar go to zero, and not mine this time. That one, and he beat me I don't know how many times, but I've only got to get you once, so Oh, finally. It's finally over. So yeah, that's my yeah, again, kept this completely like didn't tell anyone, kept it sort of completely secret for a very long time. I know Liza P had come up in a couple of conversations here and there, and I was like, don't mention it. Don't mention that you're doing this particular thing. So there we go. I'll save my I've got a lot of like what I've been playing and finishing and social media reviews and stuff, so we'll just stay on this train for a little bit. Of course, the Game Awards didn't happen, but the nominations, my brain's a little bit all over the place now, nominations happened last week. I just thought I'd share my what they call vote card. So rather than going through all the nominations, I'll just read out what I voted for. Just to cover six different categories in one go, so all of these six, I voted for Expedition 33. And that was Game of the Year, Best Game Direction, Best Narrative, Best Art Direction, Best Score of Music, Best Audio Design. And then Best Performance, I gave to Jennifer English. Games for Impact, gave to South of Midnight. Best Community Support, gave to Helldivers 2. There was another one here for Expedition, which is Best Indie, Best Debut Indie Game, Best Action Game with Battlefield 6, Best RPGs, also Expedition 33, Best Sports/Racing Game with a Rematch, Best Adaption, Last of Us Season 2, did anybody think I was picking anything else? Content Creator of the Year, Moist Critical, Innovation in Accessibility, South of Midnight, Ongoing Game, Marvel Rivals, also Best Independent Game, Expedition 33, Best AR/VR Game, Alien Rogue Incursion, Best Action Adventure Game, Ghost of Yote, Best Sim Strategy Game, Two Point Museum, Best Multiplayer Battlefield 6, and Most Anticipated Game is, I went with 007 First Light. So probably 40 to 50% Expedition 33 there, which I suspect most people's voting will be. Unless you didn't like the game, I don't know. So any of my thoughts on my vote, sir? I don't think anything's a particular surprise there, so...
No, no surprise. For the Golden Joystick Awards and for the announcements of the Game Awards, a lot of people are jokingly calling it the Expedition 33 Announcement Awards because there's 12 categories that they're nominated for in Golden. No, not Golden, in Game Awards. And the Goldens just happened, but I didn't care because they weren't nominated for Game of the Year. So,
yeah.
I'd find that to be offensive.
Yeah, just thought I'd share my vote card. Not too many big surprising things there. So that moves me on to, where do I want to go next with my stuff? Let's go to social media reviews. So this is what I usually share in terms of, you know, finished the game, did the podcast. But then of course I attach a little sort of, this game was this, it did that, etc. And I have three this week, because I finished three relatively short games. We'll save the worst for last, because I want to pivot from talking about that to a certain other game. My first social media review is going to be for Dispatch, which I gave a must-play rating to. And I said, while Dispatch is an excellent game with brilliant characters, excellent character interactions and relationships, plus giving a talented voice cast excellent material, weirdly, the part for me that didn't work the most was the actual gameplay itself. I'll just read that out one more time. Well, Dispatch is an excellent game with brilliant characters, excellent character interactions and relationships, plus giving a talented voice cast excellent material. Weirdly, the part for me that didn't work the most was the actual gameplay itself, which is related to the actual dispatching part, and then like the hacking mini game that you can do. Again, they weren't bad sections of the game, they're just the parts that clicked for me the least. But again, I think the focus for this game is, you know, got a talented voice cast, they're actually given good things to do, because that doesn't always happen. And then, yeah, it's more about the plot and the story is pretty great, but it's really about these characters shining through, and again, their relationships and their interactions. That's what makes up most of this game's quality. And then, of course, the choices that come with that, you know, what you choose to do as Robert, and Robert the character, I mean, is what he's called. Aaron Paul's character, what you choose to do with that, how that dictates your story, and all those sorts of things. What do you think of my social media review for Dispatch?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. I mean, the game is very well written. Mm-hmm. If it had come out like 2-3 months ago, I would have had it as my dark horse for Game of the Year. But it did have a slow burn. I know it's been out for like a month and a half, but it didn't come out in time for this year's awards stuff. Already talks of a season two. No spoilers, but the way they ended it, it's a possibility. There's very, very different endings that would affect the story for season two, depending on what's canon. And all I say is, a very primary character could not be in the second season because of the choices in the first season. So I'm not gonna say anything past that. Because this is a great game. And weirdly enough, I'm enjoying watching content creators that I follow play it more because some of them are like way over the top with their reaction. And it just makes it more fun. It's like when you, if like if you ever went to a comedy show and then the comedian just vibes with this one person in the audience and they just riff back and forth, the show's way more enjoyable. Because it's not just the comedian delivering the lines, you get more of like a social interaction, like you're part of a story, which is what this game does really, really well.
Certainly. But yeah, that's Dispatch. That's my social media review for that. Let's move on to my second one, which is for Keeper, which I gave the exact same rating to, which was a must play and a 9 out of 10, which is what I gave Dispatch as well. It says, while Keeper can be compared to Flower, Journey, and recently Baby Steps, it's much better as the journey here feels more worth it. It's also comparable to Devolver Digital games, that plus discussing the environment, art, and the feeling the game gives you. Essentially, what I'm trying to say there is, and I of course talked about it on the podcast, is because of the nature of what the game is, and you know the dialogueless nature of it, and things like that, kind of did remind me of Journey, reminded me a little bit of Flower, but not as much, and also kind of reminded me slightly of Baby Steps as well. Out of those three, it's probably most similar to Journey, but again, because Flower, I think I played a while ago, thought it was fine. Journey, I think, is PlayStation's most overrated game, and then Baby Steps, of course, I recently reviewed that and gave it a hard skip because it wasn't really worth it. So it's sort of this kind of what all four of those games really have in common is you play as something, and of course, you know, while the guy whose name I can't remember in Baby Steps does kind of talk, he's mostly silent throughout, and then you have just, you know, useless kind of cutscenes and whatnot. But it's more about kind of you navigating this world and like experiencing environmental and storytelling, and then just kind of the feeling it gives you along the way. And I by far think Journey is the best of sorry, Keeper is the best of those four. Plus, yeah, it's got this interesting kind of like not specific to environmental storytelling, but when you enter like new areas and stuff, it's got a way, it's got its own particular way that it sort of tells its story in terms of what you can see, the little characters that are in this little world that you come across, the way that you help them, and then how emotionally attached you can get to this actual lighthouse, and then the game just goes in awesome wild directions sort of towards the end. With the Devolver Digital comparison, and again I talked about this on the podcast, is I think Double Fine is what Devolver Digital thinks it is. And what I mean by that is both of them make very, you know, obscure, weird, wonderful kind of games, and Devolver Digital will be aware of what they do and how they do it and why they do it. But with Devolver Digital games, of course, Baby Steps being one of them, leans more into the slapstick era, and more people like that, and they know that they're that and that sort of thing. I think, and while I don't think Double Fine does slapstick games necessarily, at least from Psychonauts 1, 2, and Keeper, that's just a better, they just do that version of those sorts of stories better, I think, and in just to me in a more interesting way. I guess if you want more slapstick versions of those sorts of games, then you know Devolver Digital is what you might look towards. But because then you got the other weird and wonderful different stuff, which is like Kojima games, but that's a much different thing to what Double Fine and Devolver Digital do. So plus there's much more like dialogue and stuff, and obviously story and lore in sort of Kojima's games. And there is in things like, you know, Psychonauts and that, it's just Kojima tries that his own way, in his own way, but I wouldn't compare his work in the exact same way to Double Fine and Devolver Digital. So, anyway, what do you think of my review there of Keeper?
Yeah, it's one of those weird games, but it's also one of those games I throw into the category of you don't have to be told who makes it to know who makes it. Like, you spend 5 minutes looking at Keeper, you know, yep, that's a Double Fine game.
Yeah, yeah. So
it's also interesting because you can't have performance of the year for that game because there is no dialogue.
Yeah, yeah. So, but that's Keeper. Obviously, at the moment, Xbox exclusive. It will probably come to PlayStation at some point. And finishing off, I didn't mean this in terms of saving the worst to last, because I'm going to go from this game to talking about one that's much better. Something else that I've been playing. My excuse me, social media review for Little Nightmares 3, which I gave a hard skip rating to, and then in the subtitle said, "What was that?" with a question mark and an exclamation mark, exclamation point rather. And I put, "While Little Nightmares 3 looks and plays like Little Nightmares, it's a pathetic and empty attempt that has none of the DNA or soul of one," so of one of those games, "with areas that are completely empty or have inactive enemies and can be run through, that plus a boring ending." So I know that's quite a damning review, but yeah, it's what it is. It's a very, very, and interestingly, I thought I would think about this game more after I finished it, just because I went and watched like videos, and it seemed the Little Nightmares community's got the same opinions, which was like, "What the hell was this? What, like, huh? Like, what happened here?" What did happen here, of course, was Tercier, I think the name is, who did Little Nightmares 1 and 2, who said they were done after number 2 because that was sort of the ending of that story. Bandai Namco went and hired Supermassive, which they do make horror games, but they make the sort of YA choice-driven games that we've known about, and went from this to Little Nightmares 3, and the translation did not work at all. It's kind of simply a case, just to kind of simplify what I've said there, it's more of a really weird case that in Little Nightmares 1 and 2, particularly more in 2, because the sequel improves upon the original, which is what you're sort of supposed to do, where both those games are creepy and have great atmosphere and have like weird enemies that you wonder sort of like, how did the enemies get there? What's the story? And then you have like the weird atmospheric storytelling of like, what can I hear? What's in the next room? What is it going to do? And all those sort of like curious questions. I remember with specifically Little Nightmares 2, where I remember there was this big building that you go into and you'd be going room to room, and literally as you're approaching the door, you'll hear just the weirdest thing in the next room, and it will leave you thinking sort of, okay, what the hell is in the next room? Why can I hear that noise? What is it doing? And it gave you that sense of creepiness and dread. There are literally multiple parts in Little Nightmares 3 that you can just sprint through, because you've either got cases that there's no environmental sound going on, there's nothing creaking through the vents, there's no sort of like enemies scurrying away into corners. There's genuinely multiple rooms in this game where there's no enemies, nothing in there. The game's like got no sound, really. It's got sound when you're running and doing stuff, but it's got no sort of like, you can't hear anything weird in the distance and wonder what's coming up. And then you have a weird case of in lots of different parts of the game where there's enemies that will actually just stand in the corner that won't interact with you at all. Now that can be weird and creepy in a way if you have the threat of, oh my god, is that thing going to wake up and chase me, which is what Little Nightmares 1 and 2 have. But there are these, the big fat people from the first game, I think it's supposed to be them, are back in this game, but they're not trying to chase you and eat you. No, they just stand slumped in the corner, and you can run over to them, jump near them, use your weapon on them, and they won't move. And alongside that, again, there's just no creepiness or anything else like that. And once you get used to that, pretty much in Chapter 2, or towards the end of Chapter 1, I've just started running through this game, because there was no reason to look around at anything, because nothing was interesting to look at, and there was no sort of environmental design or storytelling or anything like that. There was no creepy sounds. And I went from almost being like, oh god, you know, so, you know, it's the next Little Nightmares game. What ways is it going to creep me out or make me run from stuff or be, you know, fearful for my character's life, which is what I'm supposed to feel, to just boringly running through weirdly open and empty areas. Things do attack you eventually in this game. And there's like two mini combat sections which are okay. But that's kind of Little Nightmares 3. It was very just kind of, again, plays like one. It looks like one. Like, if you watch it or play it, you'll go, okay, that's a Little Nightmares game. Apart from it's got, you know, the two new characters. But soul, DNA, atmosphere, creepiness, environmental stuff, none of it. There's nothing in there. But thankfully that, all three of these games, by the way, I was able to finish them because they're all about 4 hours each. And I was probably able to finish Little Nightmares 3 a little bit quicker than what I could, because I was like, right, I don't need to sneak through these rooms because nothing's attacking me. I can just run through because there's also nothing to even look at. Like, okay, if you were to give me stuff to look at, I might actually stand still for a minute and look at it and wonder what it is, which is what the first two games do. But there's often nothing to be afraid of, nothing to look at, and no reason to not just run through. So, yeah, didn't think this would happen to this game, but because it was weird, because when this game came out, I kind of missed it on its October release date, and I heard kind of middling weird things about it, like, oh, I played it safe, and it was, you know, not as good. There's not as good, and then there's just a total opposite of Bandai Namco, for some reason, allowing us to go from the masterpiece of Little Nightmares 1 and 2, particularly 2. 2's got some really incredible stuff. And like, especially the endings of both of those are really iconic for completely different reasons. And then the ending of this one is like, oh yeah, here's this reveal of this thing. And I was just like, right, okay. I guess that's that. Anyway, what do you think of what I said there about Little Nightmares 3?
Well, it weirdly kind of makes sense because it is made by a different company.
Yeah.
Ironically enough, the company that made the original is doing a similar vein game in that genre, but not branded as Little Nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
As for the emptiness, I honestly don't know because that's not a game I would play anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you can have me go through rooms that don't have anything attacking me, but make me think that there might be. Or have, like, I know it sounds kind of cheap and stupid, but, like, if I run into a room, have, like, a rat in the middle of the room scurry away into a corner or something. But there's just, like, there's actually this section in this game, because elevators are pretty common in Little Nightmares to, like, escape from stuff and whatever. And there's these two little, like, power cell things, not Jack and Daxter, but, like, these little power things. And very typical kind of Little Nightmares setup. You come up from this elevator, or I think you enter a room or something like that, and you can see, okay, there's a right and there's a left. You're going to do both. Which one do you want to do first? Because there's two power things and there's an elevator. It's like, okay, you got to go right, pick one up, put it in there, go left, do the same thing, use the elevator. But what's then supposed to happen is like, oh God, what's going to be on the right side and what's going to be on the left side? Could be the same thing, could be a different thing. And you can literally, in that particular section, I think this is the beginning of chapter 2 maybe, run all the way to the right, smash your way through whatever window it is, run all the way there, pick up this power thing, chuck it through the window, run all the way back, pop it in the power socket thing, run all the way to the left side. There's a little jumping section where you climb up these boxes, and then your AI partner will like press a button so this hook comes around. Hook takes you through to another room. There's a guy dead on the floor who won't give you any trouble because he's dead, but it's not in a creepy way. Pick up that next power thing, go back through, pop it in, jump in the elevator, and then you're good to go. But even then with the dead guy, I didn't come across the dead guy and think, oh God, what killed him? Is it still in the room? Is it going to come after me? Because there was nothing making any sound. And that was already at the point in the game where I was like, okay, I'm just not as scared or as creeped out as to what this game is doing. So, yeah, incredibly disappointing. So, anyway, that's it for the social media reviews. To get onto what I'm playing, 35 minutes in, Reanimal is the game that you were talking about, and that's had a demo come out on the PlayStation Store, which is what I played through. A little bit different still to Little Nightmares 1 and 2. It's got some different like movement and stuff going on. Much, much, much more in the line of kind of the quality of Little Nightmares 1 and 2. So this is from Tercier, which is the previous, Little Nightmares 1 and 2 devs. They moved away from Bandai Namco and are doing this, I think, independently. And just to kind of sum it up, it's just much, much better. And sort of there's enemies that actually chase you. They caught me a couple of times. It's creepy factors. There's things going on. It's only like a 45-minute slice of the game, but just gets back to the sort of better place of Little Nightmares 1 and 2. So, yeah, for the community, it's kind of, okay, Little Nightmares 3 was terrible, but we're going to be hopefully saved by Reanimal, which is coming out in February. So, that's a very, very good game that I played. And not too much more to say apart from that. It was just really, really good. And looking forward to seeing where that goes and who the enemies sort of are and why they're doing what they're doing, because that curiosity is back in that game. Last thing I've been playing to mention that is Rematch. Went back and jumped into that. I bought it on the PlayStation Store because there was like 200 games on sale. It was probably more than that, but there was a bunch of games on sale. Back into the swing of things with that. Very, very good. Unlocked the ranked play, which you have to level up to rank 5. I put a couple of clips on the YouTube channel. I called them all Rematch. You can just watch the different ones there. Some pretty wild games that happened, which was really, really cool. Still just got the issue of people just being a bit too ball greedy and being too sort of like, yeah, I'm going to flip the ball over my head 50 times and try and volley it rather than, you know, passing it at a reasonable opportunity. But that's been very, very good as well. I'm looking forward to getting back into that. That was a bit of a muscle memory adjustment as well, of sort of, you know, the third person camera and aiming with that differently and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, anyway, that's all the things for this week. That's what I've been playing and whatnot. Let's take a break, get in some housekeeping, and we'll see if that in a minute. Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Alright, just to continue the three teasers, I suppose. So, Month of Positive Creators is signed, sealed, delivered. That will be returning, it's actually Thursday this time, 1st of January 2026. Talking about 4 different content creators, 4 episodes over 4 weeks, the same business as usual. That's all edited, done, scheduled, all delivered in the post, ready to go. So, it will be arriving January 1st, 2026. I think I've teased it before as well, but from next Wednesday, which I believe is the 10th, brand new miniseries, 6 episodes across, of course, 6 weeks. I think it goes up to January 14th, if I'm not mistaken. Every Wednesday, 2 p.m, 6 different podcasts about something. You'll work out what it is, obviously, after the first one comes out, because it's a particular series. So that's coming out, so look out for that next Wednesday. At 2 p.m. The Geektown Awards are, I think, live to be voted on as well. So go to geektown.co.uk /awards to vote for all those. The podcast, I think, is out for that as well, where we decided it was me, David, and Gray. Of course, David is the one that owns and runs Geektown, and Gray is one of the other co-hosts. He's been on some Entertainment Talk podcasts. So there was that. So we went through, obviously, all the TV, games, and films for 2025 and anticipate for 2026. You can listen to the podcast and also, I think, go and vote. I think it's UK only, but go and have a look for yourself and have a look for that. Just to, I guess, plug David's, he's got a new podcast series coming out. I think it's called Geekstorians, starting, I think it's tomorrow, which is Wednesday, the 3rd of December. Some different episodes on some different geek history kind of stuff. I think he's put a trailer out for it. So anyway, go over to geektown.co.uk, check out all that. Of course, Geektown Radio and everything else. So that's all the upcoming stuff and some stuff that is already out. Over to what we've been doing. Let me scroll down. Yeah, my hard skip rating review for Little Nightmares 3. Already talked about it, but a hard skip review for that. Breaking Bad, of course, will be concluding our season 4 coverage tomorrow. That will be for season 4, episode 13. It's a big one. It's a good one. But of course, last week we covered season 4, episode 12, so you can listen to that. Must play review for Keeper. Of course, all these reviews I've mentioned are spoiler free, spoiler split, so you can at least listen to the first section if you want the spoiler free review. But as for Keeper, over on the United cast, I didn't get managed to do the Crystal Palace when I wasn't feeling particularly well when that happened. But in the game before, we did lose 1-0 to a 10-man Everton, and it wasn't very good. However, on Thursday, we play at home against West Ham, and we'll see how that goes. Over on some celebration podcasts, celebrated Pixar's 30th anniversary. Well, their 30th anniversary since releasing their first film, which was, of course, Toy Story 1, which is 30 years old. So connected to that, did another podcast called Celebrating Toy Story's 30th anniversary. Yes, for those of you that don't know, Toy Story is now 30 years old, which is pretty wild, back in 1995. Any thoughts on Toy Story turning 30? The film's 30 years old already?
No different than Pac-Man turning 45.
Yeah. But of course there's that, and of course we've got Toy Story 5 coming out next year. Must play review for Dispatch, already mentioned that, you can go listen to that as well. Of course, Gaming Talk a week before. Forgot to mention, actually, yeah, we had some scheduling issues and stuff last week. Not from you, but from me. So we missed last week. Talked about the gamer nominations, some Sony mobile games, and of course the Black Ops 7 stuff, which is funny. Talked about that. Over on Classic Reviews, did an update podcast for that. And that's what we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Let's get into some news. Alright, only got the one piece of news to talk about this week. Let me find the screenshot. It shouldn't be too far away. Some very, very bittersweet news that we've got to give you. Give me a second. Where I put it? There we go. So, as a few of you know, I've been watching a YouTube channel called PlayStation Access for 3 years or so now. I've actually kind of lost track. And one of the people who's been there, well, before I started watching the channel, is Rosie Carrick, the wonderful, just really, really lovely person. I've given PlayStation Access a podcast for Month Positive Creators, and also individually chose Rosie, I think it was the year after, be it Rosie Kedick, and she's announced that she's unfortunately leaving the channel. So this is what she posted on social media. It said, "So it's time I shared some big news. After working on PlayStation Access for 7 years, which is a long time, I've decided that it's time for me to spread my wings and fly by going independent. I have had a phenomenal time on PlayStation Access, but I'll save my whole speech once I've left, as I'm still working on the channel for around a month, so still some irons in the fire, I suppose. But all of your support, kindness, sorry, all of your support and kindness means so much to me, and I hope that you'll enjoy my content when I bring my old YouTube and Twitch channel, Professor Juice, back in 2026. Yeah, there's two people I think of when it comes to this, in terms of, we all watch a lot of different content creators. Some of them aren't as nice as each other. And of course, unfortunately, certain nasty people get more attention than other people. I would say maybe outright the two nicest people on the internet are either Chris Carr, who was on John Campion's show. I'm not sure where she's actually gone, but her. And then definitely Rosie Caddick. She, don't get me wrong, she can have her moments where like she gets frustrated at a game or gets disappointed or sad at a game. You know, no one's impenetrable on that sort of front. But just always has such a positive outlook on everything. She's really, really nice to the chat, like, all the time. Her colleagues, or, you know, work friends, whatever you'd call them, have said just, you know, nothing but really, really glowing things. I know she's really close to Ash Millman. They got the nickname Team Bikini. Of course, Ash left Access as well to do her own YouTube channel. Came back for Halloween this year, which was nice. But, yeah, it's like, and we won't be losing talent in the way of she's leaving the internet. Like, she's just going independent and doing her own thing. I was kind of like vaguely aware that she had this other YouTube channel, which was called Professor Juice. And she's got a buddy gaming channel or something, which is where her and her boyfriend do like co-op games and that sort of stuff. And I've checked out some stuff over there. But it will be weird. This will be a weird one to adjust to with Rosie leaving, because she's been on like most things I've seen on the channel, and she's had some incredible moments on there as well. Of course, they've already said, I think they've filmed The Christmas Maze, which she's probably in. She's probably going to be in, you know, streams and videos probably up until, I imagine it will be up until like the end of the year, and then when January comes around, they'll probably have some sort of leaving stream or leaving thing for her. And then somehow move on without her afterwards. In terms of Access themselves, they've only got two main hosts left, which is Rob and Dave, who are the two that have been on there since the start, for like 15 years or whatever. Now I know they have the staff writer Connor. He's on a few streams, few videos. You've also got Alex, who's like a member of the channel, but not like an official host. So they're going to need some more people, and I don't mean this in terms of like, oh, you need to balance your diversity or whatever, but you now have no women on the channel either, because Amy got unfortunately laid off last year. I think that's when like Sony was having some financial stuff going on. Ash, of course, left to go independent, but she still pops up on the channel for like Halloween stuff and all that. Holly left a while ago. Elle, I think her name was, she left a while ago as well. There are some, like, female people on the Access team, but they're all, like, you know, producers and stuff, and you don't see any of them people in videos. They're all sort of, like, people that help arrange things and, you know, arrange trips and do emails and do more of the admin work. But you've basically got four people that make content, which is, you know, Rob and Dave, who are the most regular, and then although Nathan pops up on some streams, but again, he's not an official host or something. He also does like background stuff as well. So yeah, they're gonna need some more people, and I don't know, because Access has got a very particular brand and the way that they do stuff and all that sort of thing. So whether it is okay, you adding more women to the team, you're gonna need more people, period, on the team. So maybe there might be some job listings or something soon. But because for the amount of streams and stuff that they do, Rob and Dave can't do it all on their own. Plus they kind of go on holiday more than you'd think, some of the Access team. But she's at least going to be there for a bit. There's still some content she's made in the past that I haven't seen, just because I'm like, you know, saving some of those videos and all those sorts of things. But it'll be weird not to have her there regularly. She's kind of teased as well as like, okay, she'll pop up for some stuff here and there. I imagine when they do Halloween stuff or Christmas stuff, she'll maybe show up. And when they do like, you know, certain special streams and things. So we'll have to see how that goes. I know you don't watch this channel particularly, obviously, you know I've brought it up a lot, but any thoughts on Rosie leaving and then the state of not having that many people left on the channel?
Yeah, well, I mean, the one thing that I can tell you is I forget how I heard this analogy, but it works so well I bring it up all the time. Building anything with just people, like a show, a sports team, whatever, is kind of like building a wall with irregularly shaped rocks. Mm. Not like, you know, the square rectangle bricks we're used to, just where the rock shapes are kind of all over the place. So you can get a cool looking rock. It could be like the coolest looking rock you've ever seen in your entire life. But if it doesn't fit in the wall, then not only is it not going to make the wall better, it might actually make the wall worse.
Mm.
And that's the same with them filling her spot, you know, for being on the show. You know, might be the people that are behind the scenes don't want to be on camera. I probably wouldn't take a job if it required, you know, on camera work. I've done jobs that have been customer facing. I have no problem with that, but I wouldn't want my giant oversized head on a screen anywhere. And I know a lot of people are like that. I know several, I mean, there's a whole category of VTubers on both YouTube and Twitch that spend an insane amount of money on gear just so they can have an avatar socialize with the audience, but not actually have their face on a screen for whatever reason.
Mm.
And that's perfectly acceptable. I mean, but some of those rigs are like $60,000-$70,000.
Damn.
Like insane amount of money.
Mm. Mm. But yeah, we'll see what, I guess, Access does in, because you probably won't notice this change until the new year, I suppose. I also don't know if like Rosie's leaving thing would be before or after the Christmas maze. I imagine it would be like maybe in the new year or something. And we'll see what happens. But yeah, she's just a really wonderful, really nice person. And if you want to go support her work, of course, just search for like Rosie Caddick on the social media and you'll probably find all of it there. But just very bittersweet. So anyway, that's all the end of my things this week. How about you?
I got a few things. First off, and this is something I said before we started recording, it's like I might agree with what the concept of what you're saying is, but the way you're saying it, I can't really go along with it. So we had co-founder of Rockstar, Dan Houser, pop up on Virgin Radio UK the other day, chatting with the host about Dan's new book. And because, you know, it's tech and tech talk and whatever, AI was brought up because that was just, you know, inevitable as sunrise.
Of course, yeah.
And so Chris, the host, asked if AI was going to lead us into the sunlit uplands that many of the tech visionaries are promising. And Houser unequivocally said, I personally don't think that will be the case because I think the AI is going to eventually eat itself. Because as far as I understand it, the models scour the internet for information, but the internet is going to give them AI-generated data, which is going to generate more AI-generated data, and it's going to collapse in on itself. Which, that part, I agree with. It's called a recursion loop. And anybody that knows programming, or even like the basics of programming, and if you don't, you can just do a quick internet search on it, for recursion loop, you know, that's distinctly a possibility in that. And to that point, I'm 100% with him on what he's saying. And then he decides to go off the rails a bit. And he says, when asking about the AI craze and where it will be in a few years, he says he thinks that it will be completely evaporated in a few years from now. And it will do some brilliant tasks, but it won't do every task brilliantly. And he says, humanity is being pulled in a direction by a group of people who aren't fully rounded human beings. Some of these people are trying to define the future of humanity, creativity, and or whatever AI is going to do, they are not the most humane or creative people. They're saying that, quote, we are better at being human than you are. And that's where he kind of lost me. Don't get me wrong, I've had issues with tons of people. And when it's something like legal, like they're doing something illegal, this, that, and the other, which I actually have a story on later, I have no problem not liking that person as a human being. But he doesn't go into that. He just like, oh, they're for AI, therefore they're not good people.
Yeah, it's a sticky topic these days, AI, particularly in the last, 18 months, 2 years or so. It's not a case of we need to get rid of AI, because we do use it for a lot of things, particularly in...
Oh, we're never getting rid of AI.
Oh, yeah, I know that, but like... Because when it comes to TV, games, and films, which is what AI has been... Because you don't hear anything about sort of AI being used for books or so as much. Although, maybe one day. But when you're making video games, okay, there's certain parts of that game that do require... Like, you've got AI enemies, AI teammate or companions or, you know, teammates or whatever. Like in Little Nightmares, for example, you've got your AI companion with you, and it's programmed a certain way, and etc, etc. So it does get used in games. It's just to a point where certain very greedy companies, and like I said on the podcast before, do not ever underestimate a greedy company and how they will scrape the bottom of the barrel when it comes to this kind of thing and the sort of ideas that you might hear about. Is when it involves like replacing a person or like taking away people's programming jobs and things like that, because you think that you can just replace, like, let's say a person's job, slap an AI in there and, you know, call it a day. I know there's videos shared of, like, you know, like AI Marvel films and things like that, of like, okay, see how this can look. I by the way, any single time I see an AI video of like, oh, here's Superman fighting Iron Man or something, all of them look terrible to me. Every single one of them look terrible. There's just this look that AI has got when it's used on people or backgrounds or other stuff. It just doesn't look human. It doesn't look real. I remember 3-4 months ago, maybe, I read out a story in the show, and it, in terms of how YouTube is trying to sneakily started using AI to sort of smooth out people's skin and stuff like that to, you know, make videos look more sort of glossy. And there is like an odd glossy, glowy look to certain AI videos. It just does not make things look right. And I remember when we had all the writers strike and things like that, and of course there was loads of stuff that was in there, but one of the genuine concerns from actors, and I know Ashley Birch has spoken up about this a lot, is the idea of, okay, what about if let's say if you're a voice actor, because it will be easier to do for that, is if a company trains an AI to just replicate your voice, gets rid of you, doesn't hire you for next, say, you know, say the next game, and they therefore don't have to hire a person, save money, that's where the greed comes in, and you think you can just plug an AI machine in there and replicate the same thing. But what a lot of these greedy, I call them people in suits, don't realise, is if you either do that on a writing front or on a performance front, you're just not going to get that human touch towards it. You can use it for other stuff, but there's just... It's like certain companies have gone, right, okay, let's try and not pay our writers, let's try not to pay our actors, because that involves money. Whether you think those actors and those writers are good or bad is a different subject. If you don't think your actor's good enough, or you don't think your writers are good enough, then get different ones. But some of their solutions there is sort of, oh no, get rid of the people and just plug a machine in, which just leads to things looking terrible. Don't get me wrong, there's been a couple of examples where, like, AI has been used to sort of de-age a person in a couple of scenes. That's not an entirely awful thing to do. Like, I remember at the end of, is it Rogue One, I think, like, Leia shows up for like a flashback thing. Of course, Carrie Fisher's unfortunately no longer with us, But that wasn't sort of, okay, let's make a Star Wars film and use a dead person as the main character for the whole thing. That was just sort of, okay, how do we pluck this gap almost for this sort of, what, 30-second scene just for the end of a film? And then there was another one. I think there was a film with, like, Will Smith or something where there's, like, a clone of him and it's younger, but he gets, like, slightly de-aged. But then again, that's
it's called Gemini.
I think it was that, yeah. But that wasn't like Will Smith, by what I understand, still like got paid for that film and still, you know, performed in it. It was just, okay, can we use AI or CG or whatever to just de-age him for the... And I think ideas like that are fine. Because then you're not sort of, hey, Will, we're not going to hire you anymore. We're just going to clone you twice and AI you in a film. In terms of what is it Dan Houser is saying here? I'm not completely sure what to make of it, but I just think this is a slippery slope, because it's like, oh yeah, AI is used for this, oh, AI is used for that, and it's other things like, and I didn't even realize this in the first episode, say what you want about Secret Invasion, I know most people didn't like it, apparently like the intro of that was used with AI, and it's like, okay, why can't Marvel/Disney just pay animators to make an intro?
Yeah,
like
the intro was 100% AI generated.
Yeah, which is crappy, because then it's like, okay, you animate a lot of other stuff, like whole TV shows, why can't you pay someone to make an intro for that? And then there's the Coca-Cola thing, which I've talked about before, it's just day by day you're hearing sort of like, oh yeah, by the way, this thing that came out used AI for this little thing and that little thing, and it just, it's becoming a slippery slope. But where I have the genuine bigger issue is sort of the threat of like, no, we're not going to use actors or writers, we're just going to AI the whole thing, and then you just come out with a crappy non-human experience. So yeah, because there was this idea, I think Elon Musk actually shared it, so pay attention to what that and whatever way you will, where there was like this fan crossover thing with Marvel, and it was like, oh yeah, the fans will be able to make the films that they want, and it's like, yeah, but it still looks like rubbish. It still looks actually worse than certain fan films, because it looks like too sort of fake in a way. I don't know. It's just shitty and that kind of stuff. So anyway, any other thoughts from you on this?
No, I don't like the generality of, oh, you're for AI, therefore you're not a good person. But outside of that, he's fine to say it. He didn't say anything like super crazy outrageous. He just wasn't the nicest person in the moment. So yeah.
It's just when I see people in AI videos and they look like glossy and silky, and it's like, that just doesn't, I don't know, don't, no, no one wants that. Like, yeah, it's just like, if AI is gonna take over things like that, it's got to make people look like people and not sort of like a shiny, weird looking, I don't know. Yeah, so anyway, what else do you want to talk about today?
Well, from the desk of "This game will not be allowed to die," we have an update for a game that's been in and out of development for the better part of 17 years. That game is Beyond Good and Evil 2. It first got announced in 2009.
Jesus.
It got a E3 trailer for Beyond Good and Evil 2 in 2017. And just last week, a job posting popped up for a audio technical sound designer. Now, if you're asking, why is this in such nonsense? Well, all I have to do is say one word. Ubisoft.
Yep.
They own the IP. Mm. And with everything that's going on with Ubisoft right now, I would not bet a single thing on this game coming out within the next 5 years. We've officially passed Duke Nukem Forever status, and it's now its own benchmark.
Yeah. See, the thing I've kept talking about with Ubisoft is sort of, okay, a company can be in tatters and be in a weird place, but at least try to have some games in development that people are excited for, and they don't. Apart from this, which people are looking forward to, but nobody knows where it is, where it's going to be, when it's coming out, if it's coming out, and therefore, you know, drowns out the excitement. Because one thing you could do is if development suddenly started going well, and let's say hypothetically it came out in 2026, just for argument's sake, and you put out a trailer at the Game Awards and it says 2026, that gets the excitement back there. And then again, it becomes a case of Ubisoft again might be in a bit of an odd shape, to say the least, but then, hey, Beyond Good and Evil 2 is coming out, something to be excited for, but we don't live in that sort of, we don't live in that reality currently. Well, it's still working on the game then, which is nice. You know, I mean, for people that like Beyond Good and Evil, of course I want the game to come out and for it to be very good and for people to enjoy it and for the people who worked on it to be, you know, paid and treated fairly, because that's the world that we should live in. But like you said, the one scary word there, which makes it scarier than Little Nightmares 3, is scared, is Ubisoft. For curiosity's sake, I know I bring up the, like I call them the Big Bad 3, which is Activision, EA and Ubisoft. How would you rank those in terms of which one is doing, both from a games announcement standpoint and what they're working on, and from a company standpoint, which would you say is doing the best and worst?
I would have to put Ubisoft worse than EA, because at least EA can get a game out that sells and doesn't unify half the internet against it. Yeah. I mean, say what you will with Battlefield. I mean, it's not doing good metrics-wise, but you don't have people actively boycotting the game because of the game itself, outside of just the technical issues, which there's technical issues, and then there's other stuff that people have had issues with Ubisoft with.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Important thing for Battlefield 6, though, its competition is Black Ops 7, and it's stomping that. That would be my goal if I was, obviously, to make a good game, but then, like, okay, what's our competition? Your competition is Black Ops 7, which is...
I mean, Battlefield... Puberty keeps wanting to quit on me. Battlefield 6 is still getting curb stomped by ARC Raiders, but at least it's doing respectable numbers.
But yeah, at least it doesn't have a cutscene where you... have, and I'm not calling Mexican music weird, I'm just saying in the context of the scene that I saw, where you fight an enemy that teleports, and then you get flung up into the air and you have a massive knife that you slam on the ground while Mexican music plays. I'm describing, by the way, a cutscene from Black Ops 7 that I saw and really confused me. Really confused me. Very weird. I don't know if you can, like, not, I'm not asking, like, right now or whatever, but for anybody that's curious about what the hell I'm talking about, because I didn't see it until I saw the cutscene, just look up something along the lines of, like, Mexican music called Black Ops 7, and there's a boss fight where you get, like, an airstrike mechanic, but it shoots a massive knife into the ground. I'm not making this up. I unfortunately saw it, and it's unfortunately real. I thought it was fake when I first saw it, or I thought it was some sort of, like, spoof video, but then I realized that, no, this is actually in the game. Very, very just weird tonal choices, to say the least. So, but yeah, I would probably say, well, Activision does have COD, so that puts them down a bit. Maybe EA, Activision, then Ubisoft. Ubisoft, I think we can all agree, is at the bottom of those three.
Oh, yeah.
But EA's at least had the excitement of Battlefield happening, whereas Activision obviously has had Black Ops 7. So, yeah, I'd probably say EA, then Activision, then Ubisoft. So, yeah. Cool, what else do you want to talk about today?
Well, next up, this is a topic that I've kind of been dancing around and kind of not really wanted to get in on it, but unfortunately, it's not going to let me not do that anymore. So I am rapidly losing my patience with Twitch on the content creator side. The people I follow, the people I watch, they're really good people. They're hardworking. I don't mind supporting them. But we've gotten to a point to where I will never spend another dollar on Twitch, either in subs or bits, until they get their shit together about the terrible people they leave on the channel. And so today's terrible person is streamer Nina Lynn. Are you familiar with Nina Lynn?
No.
Okay, I know literally nothing about her, but I have seen the clips.
Whoa.
And this is just and literally as bad as it gets. So she's been banned 3 times in the last 5 weeks. Her first ban came October 25th when a clip resurfaced where she was co-streaming with FaZe Silkies, FaZe Silky, whoever the hell that is, and his assistant, Syed, comes into frame, and she just reaches out and grabs his dick. Like, right there on the screen, sexually assaults him. So she got a ban for 5 days, and then as soon as she comes back online, October 30th, she gets banned immediately again because, quote, multiple clips resurfaced of her being on someone's stream. A dude walks into frame. She grabs her dick. His dick, rather.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, the initial one that I said with Saeed was May 2024, and she didn't get banned from it until October of 2025.
Damn.
So almost a full year for her to receive punishment for committing sexual assault live on stream. Her third ban was today because she was live streaming in a shopping store and stole shit. And while Twitch has not officially declared the duration of any of these suspensions, this begs the question, A, why is she even still allowed on the platform? Why is this not a permanent ban? And the bigger question that I have, why has she not been arrested for these crimes? Because it's one thing to say, oh, this person was accused of this, this person was accused of that. When you have literal fucking videos of you doing the crime and they don't arrest you for it. Plus, that goes into the whole category of me being the boomer, even though I'm technically not a boomer, not understanding your generation's love of documenting your own felonies.
Yeah, yeah. This to me just gets into, I've probably talked about this before because we talked about, you know, content creators doing things. See, when it comes to me, and of course I've never done anything like this before in my life, and I don't plan to because it's wrong and illegal and bad and etc. It's like, when I started building this platform, because at first it was like, hey, I like listening to podcasts, I like playing and watching this stuff, I'll give it a go myself, because I was able to and had the opportunity to. And then started building the platform, you know, podcast by podcast. Met people, you and David and everybody else, etc., you know, the rest is history. And then you realize, okay, you're building a podcast network, this is really cool, and you don't take advantage of that sort of situation, and you think, okay, there's lots and lots of people in the world that, you know, work full time, are really, really busy, and they'd love to do this kind of thing. They'd love to get on a camera, on a mic, or I suppose mic and camera, and talk about the things that they love, but some people don't have the time, the money, the opportunity, the energy, whatever it would be, or the equipment, or whatever, to be able to do so. Because I do consider it a privilege to be able to do this kind of thing, and it's really cool, and you can talk about things that you love and things that you don't like as well, and just have, you know, interesting discussions, and you can have fun with stuff and talk about things you're passionate about. It's brilliant. So when you do then get somebody that just causes shenanigans for shenanigans' sake, and of course she's not the only one, there's been lots of people and we've talked about them and etc., and you abuse that privilege, not only abuse, you know, apparently people around you, and also, you know, steal things on camera for some reason and whatever else, you're abusing that privilege. And that doesn't make me feel, you know, sad or annoyed or anything else like that. It's just sort of disappointing that there are people that would, not literally, of course, is a phrase, would kill for an opportunity to do, you know, live streaming and Twitch stuff, because it's amazing, excellent, it's really, really fun to do. So it just disappoints me a bit when you see people just take advantage like this. It's particularly disappointing when that person's really, really, really popular, and it's like, not only have you had the opportunity to make the content and to do it, but you're also have landed, for whatever reason, landed an opportunity where you're actually ragingly successful with it, and you're abusing that privilege, which makes that worse to me. So yeah, just from a content creator standpoint, that's just massively disappointing to me. Of course, it's their problem to deal with and not mine, because I'm not doing these things and they are. So I'll just crack on and, keep making the content that we're making. Also, just, yeah, like you said, in this day and age of, TikTok and streaming and Twitch, and not that that stuff is new, but, last 5-10 years, let's say, of, could I come across random videos on Twitter of, like, hey, here's a TikTok video of someone doing this random crime or punching somebody and running away because it will get them likes and shares and views, and that's what gets them. That's what they love doing.
So. Did the news of the DoorDash girl make it over there in the UK?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so I'll try to condense this into a too long didn't read. So okay. Basically, this girl was delivering DoorDash. She comes up to the spot where she's has to drop off the food.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy is asleep on his couch with his pants and boxers around his ankles. So she comes up with the brilliant idea of filming it, putting it on her TikTok, and then blasting and doxing the guy, claiming she was sexually assaulted by him.
Oh, yeah. I think,
and then she gets banned off of DoorDash because she doxed him, which is against their terms of service. And then she goes on a completely unhinged scream fest, screaming, "I'm the victim. I'm the victim. I lost my job. I can't make money. He sexually assaulted me. Blah, 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 blah." Well, when the truth finally comes out, he's got a doorbell cam that shows her opening the door, and she was arrested on 2 Class E felonies. One for illegal surveillance, and 2 for distribution of illegal surveillance video. Mm. Not to mention the fact that she, in the older versions before it went viral and she deleted it, allegedly, she didn't even blur out his junk. She just broadcasted that live on her TikTok. And so, theoretically, she could get up to 8 years in prison. These being Class E, most likely it's going to be community service and fines, unless she's got like a hidden past of other crimes she's been convicted of.
Right.
I doubt it'll result in prison sentence, but what do I know anymore?
But it just seems like it's a case when people do things like this, like the thing we're discussing, is like, okay, because social media and comments and likes and views and shares and gets you popularity, and there's a difference between I'm making content, not what she's doing is not making content. What we're doing here is making content. There's a difference between like, okay, I want to make something, a podcast, video, article, whatever, and it ideally needs eyes and ears, people to be aware. That's not the same thing as, because like we do this here. I have no interest in sort of wanting to be popular per se, but more, okay, we make this, it kind of requires, or the purpose of it is people to listen to it, so for it to have attention to it, but not popularity. But in the case of this, this isn't in terms of, okay, she's making content, or people that do other things similar to this, like we're discussing, to make content to sort of like do cool stuff. This is just, okay, you've resorted
to clout chasing. She's clout chasing.
Yeah, you've resorted to doing this thing to make yourself popular, but this is not what you need to do to make yourself popular. But then again, social media likes, shares, when the phone dings and you get another like, or it's what gets the blood pumping, I suppose. But the idea to them of like, oh, you could be caught because it's a bad thing and you can get in trouble, is not on their mind when they're doing this, because it's just, where's that? Let's upload the next thing, the next like all crazy video of like this weird thing that's happening, or like this guy in his apartment, because people will comment and laugh at him or make likes, and again, it's that social media thing. So
yeah, and going back to the original streamer, this is probably the biggest problem I have. Is this is something that I always say? Well, let's do the test, reverse the genders. Let's say it was a dude, and some chick comes up behind him, and he just gives her a low five. Do you think that shit would wait a year before anything happens? No, they throw him in a pit and throw away the pit in 5 fucking seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me I'm wrong. I dare you. Tell me that I'm wrong. That, you know, that would not happen.
Yeah. Yeah, so unfortunately, some of these things that young people like to do because of popularity and the social media
rot.
Yeah. See, that's not necessarily the same thing as a social media addiction. That's a like different kind of addiction. There's still a social media addiction element in there, but that's not the same as, you know, doom scrolling or commenting and liking things yourself. That's, you have the stuff and you want people to pay you attention for it. Again, not the same way as if people are liking or, you know, sharing this podcast, for example, because we're not trying to do some sort of viral stunt. So, because I don't have a need or addiction to do a viral stunt. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I miss the days when viral stunts were like...
That's great.
I miss the days when viral stunts were like extreme, you know, dunking or, you know, just like stuff that Dude Perfect does now. Things like that. I miss when that was the viral thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, hell, I'd go back to flash mobs. And I hated flash mobs.
Yeah. All right, let's move on from this. What else do you want to talk about?
Oh, well, the last thing that I got, and always glad to end on a happy note, the Sonic movie universe, I guess we're going to have to call it the SMU, is expanding yet again. The fourth movie is scheduled for release March of 2027, and Paramount has announced that another entry into the series called Sonic Universe Feature as a placeholder name will be December in 2028. The movies have done really well in the theaters, despite the fact they go online relatively quickly. The three movies have combined for about $1.2 billion globally.
Nice.
So no real shock that they want to keep that. Obviously, you weren't a fan of the Knuckles TV spinoff show. But the thing that's in the article that I didn't catch, well, two things. Paramount was recently taken over by David Ellison's Skydance, and Skydance is one of the few remaining bidders left for Warner Brothers Discovery. So that could make things very interesting depending on where that rolls out.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see where that bidding process goes. I think if you go to last week's Geek Town, it was one that I was on. Me and David talked about the wholesale thing and Netflix's involvement and that sort of stuff. I think it was the last like normal Geek Town episode. So not this week's one. I think it was last week's one because I was on it. So whichever most recent one had me on that wasn't the Geek Town Awards. Yeah, I love what they've done with these films. I think that they've done an interesting small scale like MCU thing where you'll sort of have first film, you know, Sonic building him out. Thank goodness they redesigned him after, of course, everything that's happened. It was one of the best decisions I've ever seen a company make, because otherwise you might not have ended up where you are now. And then slowly but surely, it's like tease this character, they're in the next film, then tease this character, then they're in the next film, just like the MCU kind of does, which is, you know, your post-credit scene teases leading into the next thing. Of course, Sonic doesn't have as many, you know, characters as Marvel, but they've still done a decent job of that. Still really, really enjoyed Sonic 3 as well. I wouldn't be against them doing another, like, certainly not Knuckles Season 2, that's not what I'm talking about, but another, like, TV show, because I think they can do it. Just don't ever do something like Knuckles ever again. it's interesting how sort of the first three films are so great, and of course Knuckles was in between 2 and 3, and Knuckles is honestly one of the worst TV shows I've ever seen, but then you look at Sonic 1, 2, and 3, and there's some of the best video game adaptions that we have. So it's curious how you can go so high and so low, I suppose. But yeah, they can continue building this out. I remember there was a feeling after the second one that, like, okay, Jim Carrey's talking about considering retirement. Can you do it so, like, Robotnik's in the third one, you make it as the last one, but of course there's like two more coming up. I think he's wheeled away from the retirement talk and he wants to sort of keep doing this character. I've seen Ben Schwartz talk about this as well. People love him as Sonic and he loves the role as well. It's always great to see that, isn't it, when like an actor sort of, hey, we got this tease coming up, there's this thing coming up, everyone in the comments is really excited, he's really excited, he's like, hey, thanks for, like, you know, support of me as Sonic. It's just really, really wonderful. It's just really nice to see that kind of thing, isn't it? Rather than like, oh yeah, you have this franchise, you've ruined it, and this is coming out and people aren't excited. It's just nice to see a fandom excited about something as well, with like no, there's basically no controversy at all really around this franchise, apart from, again, Knuckles in a way, but that's not like controversial, it's just poorly made. But so yeah, looking forward to seeing what they're in terms of predictions. Like, I know nothing about the Sonic lore, so I couldn't tell you what might be in that film or what characters. But yeah, they did some interesting teasers again, end of Sonic 3. So I guess, you know, once every couple of years these will come out, which would be cool. And yeah, I look forward to seeing where it goes. How about you? Have you seen the three films at least? And the, I don't mention you've seen Knuckles, but yeah. Have you seen the films? Did you mute yourself?
Yeah, I've seen the first three. I really liked them. They were really good. The only franchise I've seen that's even close to that is the fact that we're getting another Spaceball movie.
Huh.
And the good thing about that is that Rick Moranis is coming out of retirement of acting in order to do that. He quit acting when his wife died of cancer because he didn't want strangers raising his kids.
Huh.
The downside is that so many people that were in the movie have since passed away.
Mm.
John Candy's passed away. Dick Van Patten's passed away. Joan Rivers has passed away. I'm sure there's a couple others that weren't as popular that I'm missing, and I do apologize for that. But yeah, seeing Rick Moranis do something again acting is kind of exciting for me,
because
he was in so many movies that I watched. You know, the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids series, all kinds of like feel-good underdog movie stories, and then, you know, tragically his wife passes away and nothing forever.
Yeah, can change a person, I suppose. So, or really affect a person. I remember that film. Yeah, I remember it being pretty, I haven't seen it for many years, but I remember it being pretty good from what I remember.
I think my favorite part of that film was the only requirement that George Lucas had was they couldn't make Bill Pullman's character look like Han Solo.
Okay.
So they made him look like Indiana Jones.
Cool. Nice. Yeah, I like any of those kind of small things in a big scale world. So, of course, Toy Story is number one in that, but then sort of like the Small Soldiers stuff, that film, there's probably a few other examples, but it's just kind of an interesting perspective way to do things. I guess A Bug's Life does have that as well. So, I think there's a few Pixar films that do that. And not specifically in the way of something's been shrunk, but something is small in the world, you know, like a toy or a bug or something, and the world is to scale for them. I quite like that idea. I know Grounded was the shrinking, they get shrunk in that, don't they? So
yeah, Grounded was in concept, not in name, based off the Honey I Shrunk the Kids movie, because it was literally, that movie was the kids shrink, they're in the backyard,
yeah,
the bugs are size of horses and they get attacked by them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, there's no like base building or survival aspect because it's a bunch of 10-year-old kids. Can't really do that.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I like that kind of scale idea and stuff. Which yeah, Moss does that as well, doesn't it? The VR games, mm-hmm. which I really like. So, cool. All right, you said that's the last thing you've got.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to some feedback, some emails. If you'd like to write into the show about anything we've discussed, of course, by special announcement, any games that we've played, my thoughts on Little Nightmares 3, Robert's Trip, Sonic films, anything that we talked about in this podcast, let us know what you're playing. Let me know if you're playing Lies of P as well. Are you stuck on the final boss? I can't necessarily give you... If you want advice as to how to beat Nameless Puppet, I still wouldn't recommend asking me, because... I don't quite know exactly what I did. It just kind of worked, and then cube of health left, went for broke, and then it was all over. Anyway, Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, Twitter, social media is either eTalkUKare or Entertainment Talk, which, by the way, I'll be trying to share whichever platforms let me do it, the one-minute clip of me winning that fight. So that'll be cool to see. Again, unfortunately, no audio with that, because you... can't do that. Anyway, yeah, methodentertainmenttalk.org, social media is either eTalkUKare or Entertainment Talk, and there's information in your show notes. Chris is technically first, and says, goes back to our Switch IP and Naughty Dog discussion, says, wait, so Matt would buy a Switch 2 just for The Last of Us 3. So in case some of you don't know what he's talking about, somebody asked us a hypothetical question 2-3 weeks ago? I think it was 3 weeks ago. About, like, me and Robert kind of dipping out of Nintendo games and sort of what would they have to do to bring us back, which neither of us necessarily had an answer for, which is okay. And, of course, somebody said, you know, if Nintendo hypothetically bought Naughty Dog and then Last of Us 3 came out on Switch, what would that mean? Would I buy a Switch 2 just for The Last of Us 3? Like, the game itself, which I still believe is in development, it's just a case of... when, not if, it gets announced, which still won't be till after Intergalactic, which is still another 2 years away at least, probably. I imagine by the, I mean, Nintendo's a bit, let's say, quirky, weird with prices. If you're talking about a scenario then when, let's say, Last of Us 3 is 6 years away, because that's about how far away it feels. How cheap would the Switch 2 be? But would there be a Switch 3 rumored slash coming up? Would there be like a Switch 2 Pro coming up? If that were to make that cheaper, see, what I would probably do is, again, I wouldn't just like, okay, buy that, play Last of Us 3 on that, and then get rid of it. I may as well then at least try some newer Nintendo games by that point. Again, you're talking maybe 5-6 years in the future. Play some of those, and then, you know, if I still don't vibe with the Switch 2, which I probably wouldn't, then just sell the thing and get some money back. That would probably be my plan. But they talk about, it's called like Killer App or something, they call it, when it's like, okay, this is the must-buy thing for this, you know, the system kind of seller. That would be a very definitive system seller for that. So... I would, but I wouldn't just play it for that. I would maybe at least try some other games, because I might as well if I bought the thing. So it's a shame you can't sort of, because you can rent, I mean, at least over here you can rent games and things like that, and obviously we've got, like, you know, Game Pass and Game Trials, that sort of thing still does exist. You can't really, like, rent consoles. I guess, can you sort of, if you bought, like, a Switch 2 off Amazon, return it after 30 days?
I don't know return policies.
Yeah.
I know the rental stores used to let you rent consoles, but rental stores have pretty much gone the way of VHS and Betamax.
Yeah.
I do know one thing, though.
What?
If you got a quote-unquote free copy of The Last of Us 3 on PlayStation 5, but you had to be in a family photo with the Glazers, you'd probably do it, or at least seriously consider it.
Would I have to shake...
Come on, you know you would at least consider it.
Would I have to shake their hand or put my arm around them for the photo?
You'd have to do the hand on shoulder with at least two members of the family. Doesn't matter who.
Hmm.
Like, you know, the group shop where everybody's alive? Like arm in arm.
I think the three brothers are still alive. I think the dad is gone. It's funny you mention that because, yeah, Glazers, horrible, awful, worst owners probably in football history, because they've literally never put a penny into Manchester United, which sounds weird. But it's funny because within the last, I think it's now 2 years, December 23, I think it was, since Jim Radcliffe now co-owns the football club, because Jim Radcliffe now actually comes out, says stuff, and is actually at the games, because he sort of actually in the picture, whereas the Glazers are often in, I think it's Los Angeles or whatever, in their mansions or wherever they live, and just sort of quietly collect money in America. We don't moan at them as much because they don't kind of like before
out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, and now because Jim and Ineos are like in the spotlight, and they're actually, you know, he's made cuts and he's, you know, said about trimming things. He's now being kind of blamed more because he's the one that's like actually in the spotlight and has taken the spotlight, which was probably the Glazers' plan, which is like, hey, yeah, we'll still have some control of the situation because we'll still have shares. We'll put Ineos like in charge, quote unquote, of it. Jim's already in England because he's an English like billionaire, so he'll be front and center in camera, and then we can just stay and giggle in the corner even more, collecting money because people will stop paying attention to us, which we kind of have. I can't actually remember the last time, because we're still in like a pretty bad run of form, the last time in any video or even myself have been like, oh, Glazers are still a problem, because they are. But now it's like, Jim said this, Jim said that, and it doesn't also help that Jim's saying stupid stuff. But I guess congratulations to the Glazers, because they are still earning money, and they just switched the attention to Jim and to Ineos. So, yeah, I guess they're smart at doing something. So, although they borrowed more money than they spent to buy a great football club, have earned money from it without putting any money into it, and can now just like quietly earn money. It's actually quite smart if you think about it. Horrible, but they've played the situation well, in a way. All right, let's move on from that. And Ben says, wow, I don't think I've heard Matt describe a game as pathetic before. Was Little Nightmares 3 really that bad? See, the pathetic angle that I took was sort of like, okay, it didn't have to be as good as Little Nightmares 1 and 2. Didn't have to be, and that's a very high bar. And if you ask most people in that community, they'd probably say, okay, we just wanted a, you know, pretty good game that, okay, didn't reach the standards of 1 or 2 because that bar is very high. But you could have just done something a bit more. But I just remember, I never thought I'd be running through, you know, like Limbo, Inside, Little Nightmares, those sorts of creepy horror games. I never thought I'd be just sprinting through rooms because nothing's attacking me or making me think that I shouldn't sprint through. Because, and like excuse me, as I'm running through these levels, I'm like, okay, can't hear anything, nothing's attacking me. Oh, there's an enemy in the corner. Run past them, they don't chase me. I'm like, okay, this just comes across as a pathetic effort in terms of, like, if you'd put more in the game to at least make me slightly more creeped out, then there wouldn't be, like, the feeling of a pathetic effort there. But, and it's weird, and I didn't remember this until I started watching videos. At one point, I don't remember when it was, the game got delayed a year, and I was trying to figure out why that would be, because A, if that's a case of, you know, polish in these days with games, what is there in here that you needed a polish? Because there's just not that much in the game, because you certainly didn't take a year off to add to the game, because there's genuinely so little in this game. Like when I'm sort of playing Tomb Raider or Uncharted or what's like an act, like a Just Cause or something like that, and like you're running, jumping, swinging, and you just sort of, you're not carefree because you still need to watch your health and shoot and stuff, but and you have the threat of being shot, but the game's very sort of, you know, fast paced action, you'll take cover now and again, but you'll do a lot of running. I just didn't think I'd be running like that in a Little Nightmares game, because there's just nothing attacking me. Or even if I run through one area, get into another, and then hear a weird noise and go, right, gotta, you know, calm down and gotta sort of, like, sneak around because I might get attacked. Actually, kind of was interesting because there was bits of it that threw me off, because there's, like, 4, 5, 6 rooms you'd run through because there's nothing in it. And then an actual combat section would come up. Not one that would creep you out, but one that would be like, okay, now I actually have to pay attention to what I'm doing a bit more and attack. But, yeah, weird. What do you think of, that discussion, I suppose? of me describing it like that.
Since I haven't played the game, obviously I don't know about that. I have played a few games to where the gameplay felt really empty. I don't know that I would have called it pathetic as much as wildly disappointing. But it might just be the old man in me. It's like, I'm not mad at you, son. I'm just really disappointed in you. That kind of a thing.
Yeah. Anyway, there's that. Excuse me. And lastly, Karen writes, what game would you really like a sequel, remake, or reboot of? Which game would I want a sequel for? Apart from obvious ones. I guess you mean ones that are sort of unlikely to have one and you really want one for. What game would I like a sequel of? I know what game I'd like a remake of, which is Jak 2, Jak 3, and maybe Jak X. Because Jak and X, the one's great, but 2 and 3 and X could do with some reworking. Something like a Mirror's Edge. A sequel to something like Mirror's Edge. I know we've got Dying Light, which has kind of filled that gap, although it's, full of zombies. I guess reboot or sequel would work in that way, because if I was to go back to a new Mirror's Edge game, I wouldn't need it to have, like, the canon and the continuity. Just put, faith back in the game and have me do what I was doing before. So that fits either of those. Sequel or reboot. See, I don't know enough about Dead Space 2 and 3 to know if. Because I remember you said with 3 they did some microtransaction stuff, but
A lot of
I can't remember what
microtransactions.
happened with 2. So. Because if you're saying sequel or reboot, because you remade the first one and it was phenomenal. You know that I love the remake of Dead Space 1. But if you basically do that again, but if there's canon or things that matter in 2 and 3 and you need to do a sequel that way, then the sequel route. But if you can do it in a way of if you either did it just a sequel to 1, if the canon from 2 and 3 isn't necessarily, or from whichever game it matters from, I guess you could technically do a reboot of that, but I'd still want Isaac, I'd still want some of the same characters. And I wouldn't want you to do it a reboot in terms of, restarting the world and the gameplay and stuff, because that's what made it so great. So yeah, either of those choices for Mirror's Edge and Dead Space, and then yeah, remake of Jak 2, 3, and X. How about you?
More than a few games, actually.
Hmm.
The progenitor of BioWare's RPG style, before Mass Effect, before Knights of the Old Republic, they did a game called Jade Empire. It
I do love
was
that game, yeah.
loosely based off of A Journey to the West. And that's where you see where they got their first idea for the morality system. They didn't call it Light Side, Dark Side. They didn't call it Paragon Renegade. It was open palm and closed fist, meaning more passive and more aggressive. But pretty much everything RPG style they did past that, you can really see the influence on that. So either or for that one. Definitely at a, you probably wouldn't be able to do a refresh with the original cast because of licensing issues. But if they could reboot, relaunch the Buffy the Vampire Slayer video game that was on the original Xbox, that would be cool. That had a really great combat system, and the writing was absolutely on point. I think they had the show writers write the script. The dialogue came off as, like it's from the show. Outside of Sarah Michelle Gellar, everybody did the voice acting. So you had, James Marsters doing Spike. You had Anthony Head is doing, Giles, Summer, Summer and Xander and Drusilla and all of them were doing their voices. It was a great game. It did get a sequel, but a lot of the show staff did not return for the voice acting on the second one, so it suffered from that. And probably a really weird one. But since fighting games like the Smash Brothers and whatnot are still popular, I would love to see some sort of remake sequel to an old Sega game called Power Stone. And basically, it was, you know, your typical fighter. They all had the same movesets, and the stones would come in, and you grab them, and then if you got hit bad, you drop them, and if you collected three, then you basically went into Super Saiyan mode.
Yeah. Another one of mine, and this is a bit particular, if you rewind to Assassin's Creed 3, don't kill Desmond, and then just make a sequel with Desmond like you were supposed to. And then just carry on from there and ignore all this other stuff that's come out afterwards. Yeah, that'd be great. I've heard like Nolan North, I think it was maybe Troy Baker as well, talk about those games and what was supposed to happen. It's very disappointing that those plans didn't come through. So, but like you said, the ugly word Ubisoft involved there. I know that's from like over 10 years ago, but still, same kind of thing. Because what you could maybe do with Assassin's Creed, because it's obviously an IP that Ubisoft wants to keep using, is make a new game, make it after the events of, or like rewrite the end of Assassin's Creed 3 and have something else happen. Do finish off Ezio and Desmond's story. Sorry, Ezio and Altair's story. Then do Desmond as the modern day protagonist, which is what you were leading to anyway with the whole bleeding effect. That was the whole point. Do maybe like three of those or two of those. And then once you actually properly finish Desmond's story, then you can reboot it and do whatever you want with it. Then you can do all this Ragnarok, Shadows, every year's a different thing, kind of stuff. Or you can even just do that as a side thing, whatever. But yeah, so that's my other choice.
Did you hear that Ezio is not in the Assassin's Creed collector series?
What collector series?
The Assassin's Creed Odyssey and Syndicate trilogy they released. They don't have any references to him. It's really weird.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a weird.
And this is supposed to be like a retrospective of all the Assassin's Creed games, and they didn't include the original trilogy, and they don't include any reference to Ezio, apparently.
Because Ubisoft wants us to forget them.
Yep, pretty much.
I think, yeah. But I just don't get when you go from like Ragnarok to Vikings to Shadows, and it's like all totally different things. Like, hey, now you're just doing anthology stuff, which is completely the opposite of the idea that you would do with Desmond. So, yeah. But yes, we've concluded Ubisoft's state of affairs in this episode. Anyway, that's it for the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening. In the meantime, you can find everything else that we do on entertainmenttalk.org for TV, games, films, Monday Night, a podcast. Upcoming, like we said, Geekstorians tomorrow. I'm not sure what time David's releasing that, but just get yourself subscribed to Geek Town Radio on iTunes. You can also then go and listen to last week's episode and this week's Geek Town Radio. Look out from, well, 1st of January is a while away anyway. Look out for that for Month of Positive Creators. And then next week from the 10th, look out for a new, brand new 6-episode miniseries from me. Special episode tomorrow, hopefully around 2 p.m. if I can schedule it for that, get it done, is, should I say the title of what it's called? I might as well. Overcoming Lies of P and Myself is what I'm going to call the title for that, which is all about what I did there. I'm now in the weird phase of like, I did do that, but it like feels like I did, but my brain's like sort of in this new spot of like, no, you don't have to try doing that thing again because you did it, and it's confused as to how it feels about that. So there's no more like go back in that arena and try. I mean, I can obviously if I want to. I'm not gonna go back in there. But yeah, my brain's now doing the weird thing of like, no, you don't have to like plan another spot of going back in there and trying again because you've done it. It's a new point for me, I suppose. So, anyway, yeah, TV, games, films, Monday Night Podcast, of course, United Cast, Thursday for West Ham, Breaking Bad, big podcast for that, season finale, tomorrow, should be covering that, and yeah, other stuff coming up, clearly some big stuff coming up and happening as well, so keep your eyes and ears peeled to both Geektown and geektown.co.uk and Entertainment Talk for all those things. Word of mouth, social media, telling other people, and if someone mentions a thing we podcasted on, please tell them about said podcast. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers, and free podcast review options. Check that out as well if you want to. TV and film news, like I said, Geektown Radio Tuesdays, geektown.co.uk for your TV and your film news, because there are like news posts and things like that as well. So check all that out. And then YouTube, put some rematch stuff on there, so go and check that out as well. Entertainment Talk plays for that. And yeah, like I said, check the social media stuff for the Liza P video, depending on which ones I can put that on. So, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.